Case number 12-5363, Electronic Frontier Foundation Appellant versus United States Department of Justice. Mr. Romold for the appellant, Mr. Tenney for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mark Romold, I represent the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Your Honors, the OLC opinion at issue in this case set forth for the executive branch an authoritative, controlling interpretation of federal surveillance and privacy statutes. The OLC opinion here resolved a dispute between the FBI and the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, a dispute stemming from the FBI's practice of obtaining call record information from telecommunication companies without any legal process or a qualifying emergency. Now, this practice is in apparent conflict with the Stored Communications Act, which requires the FBI to obtain process to, or to use process to obtain call records, or for telecommunication firms to turn over records if there is a qualifying emergency. Nevertheless, the OLC opinion here determined that in certain redacted circumstances and relying on certain redacted statutory authority, the FBI could indeed obtain
call
records.
You don't seem to be talking about what the case seems to be about.
Well, Your Honor,
you're talking about the merits or the values of a program, and what we're here about is whether certain exemptions apply before you, right?
Well, Your Honor, the deliberative process privilege is so dependent on the factual circumstances in which a particular document is used.
Is it? Or is it dependent upon the role and nature of the...
It also is a role and nature of the document in the process. And what I was attempting to set forth was the factual background in which this document was prepared and authored. And so the...
Can I ask you this question? Under your view, if we knew that the FBI decided not to act in accordance with the license that purportedly was given to it by the OLC opinion, would you still be making the same argument?
Yes, Your Honor, because it doesn't just apply to the FBI. It applies throughout the executive branch. So just because the FBI has chosen not to rely on this authority, the CIA, for example, or another...
Begin your brief with a footnote referencing CFR section that you never quote. Have you looked at what the 28 CFR...
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have it in front of
you? I do not have it in front of me.
Okay. That says that the office is charged with preparing a formal opinion to the Attorney General, rendering a formal opinion, legal advice to the various agencies, assisting Attorney General performance of functions as legal advisor. Talk about advice. Isn't that quintessential pre-decisional?
Yes, well, in
what could be more pre-decisional than giving advice?
It's the character of the office that determines whether it's quote-unquote advice or not. So the OLC offers...
I don't even understand what that means.
Well, Your Honor...
Quote-unquote advice. Take the quotes off. It's advice.
Well, Your Honor...
It says they do.
If I offer the FBI advice on a legal interpretation, the FBI
you're
isn't...
in the government, that's pre-decisional, and you can't get it.
The FBI is not bound to follow it. However, when the Attorney General offers his advice, it's not advice, Your Honor. It becomes the agency's law because of the nature of the office. It's the same.
And which agency
which
are you talking
agency?
About
yeah, what
when
are you,
you
talking
say it
about?
Becomes the agency's law?
Yeah. When the Attorney General renders advice for any department of the executive branch, on a legal question, it becomes the agency's working law.
No, so suppose the OLC opinion was issued to HHS, to Health and Human Services. When you say it becomes the agency's law, are you saying that it becomes the agency being the Department of Justice, or are you saying the agency's the Department of Health and Human
well,
Services?
Well, both the Department of Justice and the Department of Health and Human Services. Your Honor, there's
really?
Considerable
what
authority.
Case law supports that yeah. notion?
Well, you say that over and over, but where do you get that from?
Your Honor, Edwards v. Carter, this circuit, there was a reference in that case that said there's considerable authority stand for the proposition that an attorney general's opinion is binding on the executive branch officer that requests that opinion. That citation referenced Supreme Court opinions dating back to the
You're
early 1900s.
You're assuming OLC is the equivalent of the attorney general.
When OLC is rendering its formal written opinions, it is acting as the voice of the attorney general under the CFR authority that Judge Sentelle just cited.
What other kind of opinions can they render?
Well, presumably they could render informal advice, off-the-cuff suggestions. You know, they could take a preliminary look at a proposed agency action and render advice then. But that's very different than OLC's formal written opinion authority, which they primarily rely on in two circumstances. When there's a dispute between two agencies and OLC acts in a quasi-judicial function to settle that dispute, and in the other circumstance where the formal written opinion is most likely to be used is when there is a significant question of statutory interpretation or constitutional interpretation that the courts are unlikely to ever resolve. So in that sense, OLC is acting as the final word.
So is there any context under your view in which an OLC opinion that's not a draft, I take your point about a draft, but in an OLC opinion that is final for those purposes, at least in the sense that it's not a draft, is there any context in which that OLC opinion is not subject to disclosure, notwithstanding Exemption 5?
Yes, Your Honor. So this case only presents a narrow question of whether the deliberative process privilege applies. And our position is that these formal written opinions, after they've gone through...
No, could you answer the presiding judge's question, please?
Yes, sir.
Very curious. Your argument is so sweeping. Is there any situation that you can imagine an OLC opinion as not being disclosable?
I could, when the fact of the opinion itself was classified.
Well, for the purpose of deliberative process.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the question about the deliberative process?
For purpose of deliberative process, does the deliberative process privilege ever stop an OLC opinion from being subject?
Yes, it depends on where the advice is being rendered to. If OLC is offering advice to the Attorney General or to the President or to some office within the President, in those circumstances, it's whether or not the agency or the official receiving the advice has the authority to disregard that advice. If they
that
don't...
That doesn't make a great deal of sense. The agency, the office is there to give advice. Advice is given to reach decisions. The pre-decisional protection is there to prevent disclosure of this internal advice. You've got that office sitting there who's constructed for the purpose of giving advice, and you're saying they can't give advice unless they're willing to have it be publicly disclosed. Does that really make sense?
Well, Your Honor,
is there any point in the pre-decisional privilege if it's going to be
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I'll tell you why. And I think what your question gets to is whether or not agencies will continue to seek OLC's advice. And if a formal opinion has to be disclosed. And the answer is absolutely yes. And that's because OLC's opinions provide valuable resource for agencies. They resolve disputes. Agencies will continue to have disputes regardless of if... The resolution of that dispute is...
We're talking about seeking the advice of OLC, which is what they're there for, to give advice.
The FBI, I mean, it seems to me in the case law, you've got cases like Brinton and other cases that work totally against your position. Even the Second Circuit cases, which you're trying to ride, don't go as expansively as you do. They say some OLC may be... disclosable, but they don't go as far as your argument. I'm really surprised to hear your argument today. It seems to me you have to show that the FBI adopted the position as law, and what's your best evidence of that?
Well,
I mean,
Your
that's
Honor,
what our case law says. And there are a lot of cases that say if you get this kind of advice given interagency, it is not necessarily disclosable. It looks like it's decisional unless it's adopted.
Can I answer the first, what I heard the first part of your question was asking about the case law that they cite, Brinton, Murphy, and the Second Circuit. So I'd like to address that first and then discuss adoption, if that's okay with Your Honor. In Murphy, The Office of General Counsel of the Department of the Army had no authority to make final legal decisions for the Department of the Army.
Nor does OLC have any conclusive authority to mandate that the FBI adopt its position.
They do have the authority to determine the legal interpretation.
They do not have the authority, and you assert this, and I can't see it. I can't figure out where this is coming from. It is not necessarily conclusive. When OLC issues something like this, it is not conclusive that it is the law as far as the agency who's receiving or the department receives it is not necessarily the law. It may or may not be accepted.
Well, I'll try again to explain our position. And
we understand your position, I think.
Well, Your Honor, and I don't think, as I read the government's brief, I don't think they actually contest that the FBI was obligated to follow the interpretation of the law. What the government says is that the FBI retained the discretion to implement policy that the OLC's statutory interpretation may or may not allow. That's the authority that the FBI retained, but the OLC opinion was the final statement of the agency's law, and that's also reinforced.
No. See, you're talking about two different laws. There is the law to apply to a question of policy, and you can ask OLC, well, what do you think about how does the law come into play here? And OLC says, well, in our view, it comes into play in X, Y, and Z fashions. Then you go develop your policy. That's deliberative. That's what they are arguing here. Then there is law. The FBI goes to OLC and says, tell us what our policy should be and write it for us and make it consistent with all applicable law. Then you've got a good case. That's not what's happening here, at least as far as I understand the record.
Well, Your Honor, so our understanding of the way OLC and the circumstances under which OLC issues opinions are when there are concrete, specific, factual disputes, right? They're not issuing interpretations of law generated in the abstract, where they provide a sweeping description of how some statutes interact with others. They're deciding concrete issues.
Right, so you go to OLC and you say, we've been doing X. Is that lawful? You say, no, it's not. Here's the things to think about. And then you go back and you write a policy. That's a concrete problem that's presented to OLC. That doesn't make it any less deliberative, merely because they're deciding a concrete question. They're given a concrete question. The agency or department says, we've been doing this. Is this good or bad? Because the OIG says maybe not good. OLC says, we've analyzed it. Here's our view generally on what you're doing. Then the agency or department decides what to do in developing a policy.
Right. And if
that's what lawyers do in interacting with their clients.
If there were recommendations or suggestions within the OLC opinion, we're willing to concede.
You don't even have a recommendation. You can say, here's our view of how the law applies to these kinds of situations. Why is that not deliberative?
If the FBI is obligated to follow that interpretation, then it's not. And the OLC itself recognizes that it is issuing controlling interpretations of the law. The OLC best practices memo, which we included, it's in the record, Your Honor, it describes its formal written opinions as controlling on the question of law.
Memo, but that is nothing but a best practices memo. You did not include the language of the CFR section that you cite, nor the language of the statute which authorizes it. Neither of those says anything about them binding anybody to anything. It says advice.
Well, as to the best practices memo,
it's a more deliberative process than giving legal advice. Does somebody try to make a decision?
Your Honor, both parties, in fact, the government cited the best practices memo originally, and that's what placed this memo in the record in the first case. So I don't think
Can
there's
you give
really
me the
any
answer to my question before your time runs out. That
the
is, when
question
the
of adoption.
FBI, as opposed to the OIG, say that this is the law. This is our law going forward.
Your Honor.
That this document from OLC is the law we're following.
Your Honor, under the Supreme Court's precedent, the adoption does not have to be public. It doesn't have to be outward. It has to be express.
I want to do it my way, seriously, because I'm trying to understand your position. When did the FBI ever do that?
I think the best evidence we have is when former general counsel of the FBI raised the OLC the OLC opinion and testimony before Congress.
Yeah, I have that sitting in front of me. She did not do it the way you're describing it. She simply referred to the OIG. That's all. She wasn't invoking. I'm looking at the quote. She was invoking. She was not invoking the OLC's opinion as the law of the FBI. She was referring to the OIG's description of what went on.
Your Honor, I can check on the reference, but the OIG's, my understanding of what...
Here's what... You're talking about Caproni, right?
Yes.
The OIG's 210 report discusses a January 8 opinion issued by the Department of Justice, OLC, which concluded that ECPA does not forbid blah, blah, blah. That's all. She's not saying that's the FBI's position.
Well, then she also offers to discuss that opinion with Congress in closed-door sessions. If the FBI had not adopted and relied on that opinion, there would be no need. She could expressly disregard
there's
the opinion.
There's always a need. If Congress says, come, we want to talk to you, you have to go talk.
Well, there's no... There was no indication that Congress said, come, we want to talk. She volunteered that information and said she'd be happy to discuss it.
But that's the best you have, right?
Well, and also the OIG's reference to...
I understand you're trying to ride the OIG's description of what's going on. I understand that argument completely. And if that were conclusive, you're in a very strong position. But I wondered if you had anything more than
well,
that.
Well, and also the Colburn Declaration, Your Honor. The Colburn Declaration, which we've cited in our brief, repeatedly states that the OLC opinion was used by the FBI to ensure that its practices were in compliance with the law going forward. That, to me, it sounds a lot like adoption. And, Your Honor, I had hoped to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you. We'll give you some rebuttal.
May it please the Court, the document at issue here was prepared during a consultation between the FBI and the OLC as the FBI was reevaluating its policies and determining what its practices would be with respect to certain surveillance techniques going forward. This is classic deliberative process material. Both if you think about it from the standpoint of the FBI soliciting advice as it's considering a policy decision, if the FBI knew that the advice it got back would be made public, then the FBI's own deliberations would be made public. Similarly, from OLC's perspective, they're going to give candid advice. We expect the advice to be more candid and easier to give frank advice if they know that the advice that they're giving is shielded from disclosure.
Don't overstate it. A lot of OLC stuff is published, right?
That's correct. And the key point is not whether all of the advice should be made public. The question is whether it should be involuntarily made public or whether it's... Because the process by which OLC opinions become public is that OLC determines for itself and then consults with the affected agencies to determine whether the opinion is something that can be made public without damaging internal executive branch deliberations and other considerations.
Well, suppose we viewed this as... And it looks in part like this. Suppose we viewed this as a situation in which they asked the OLC for determinations to the legality of their existing position. And I guess OLC gave them a determination on that. And they're using the OLC's memo now to justify what they previously did, even though they're going to have a new policy going forward. Isn't that law that has to be disclosed?
Because
aren't they using that OLC memo to justify what they previously were doing?
It does depend on what you mean by using the OLC memo to justify what they're doing.
Well, they're waving it and saying, hey, you know, we're not embarrassed by what we previously did because we have support from the OLC and that's our position. We're adopting that position.
Well, if they say that they're expressly adopting it in the sense that they're saying the law that we're applying is as follows, and it is, and that is the law for all of the reasons given the OLC opinion, then that might be express adoption. Of course, we don't have anything like that here, but even with your hypothetical, to the extent that the OLC opinion might provide some support for what they were doing, that's different from adopting as the cases all bear out. And
well, there's a strange argument going on here about there's a specific statutory provision, and we're relying on that, and we got that from OLC. I mean, that makes it much tighter than just kind of a loose discussion in a memo. They're saying they gave us the authority, and that's the authority we're relying on to justify past behavior. Now, why isn't that different from the argument with respect to what they ought to do in the future, which is developing new policy, looks very deliberative to me.
Well, there's a few points buried in there. One is that the thing that gives them the authority to do what they're doing is not OLC; it's the statute, and so they're not saying OLC authorizes us to do this.
I'm talking about adoption.
You're talking about adoption. Well, I mean, it's going to depend on how they're justifying, and to say that it's adoption for past conduct, I mean, that wouldn't really characterize it as I'm not sure how that would characterize it as working law. The working law is the law that the agency is applying. To say, so we did something before, somebody told us after the fact that it was all right, that's not adopting it as the law of the agency going forward, which seems to be the relevant inquiry in all of the cases. The point is whether the question here, and if you're looking for something that's not covered by the deliberative process privilege, you have to look to the FBI, and you have to say, what is the FBI doing? What is it instructing its officers to do? How is it dealing with the public?
So on that question, I guess it seems to me the biggest obstacle you face, or at least one of them, is the tax analyst decisions that we have. Because if I understand your argument on this score, and this seems to be the principal submission that you put forward in your brief, is that if OLC gives legal advice to the FBI on what it may do, the FBI can still choose whether to engage in the policy that's allowed by the OLC advice.
Right.
And because that's an independent policy determination, you never get to the point of final policy, and therefore the OLC opinion that gives license to the FBI to do something doesn't have to be disclosed. And that treats the legal advice as not an end in itself, that the end in itself is the programmatic decision that's ultimately made by the FBI. And that seems to run contrary to our tax analyst decisions, because there you could have made the very same argument. But what we said twice in those two cases is that, no, the legal opinion that's given to the person who's ultimately making a decision of what to do with it is itself a definitive conclusion as to the law. And as to that, it has to be disclosed.
But you have to look at the nature of the legal question that's presented. In those tax cases, the question was a question of tax law. And a determination that the tax laws must be applied in this manner, and so taxpayers owe this amount of taxes, or taxpayers have to fill out this form. You can't, there might be a programmatic decision about how to implement it, but that is a legal determination that applies to the public. And you're saying, and it was repeatedly stated in all of those cases, that members of the IRS or the relevant agency are told, and use these as precedent, in your dealings with the public, this is the law that you are to apply. And so a taxpayer is, in a sense, being regulated by that. That's the tax law that applies.
I'm not understanding the distinction because, and maybe I'm just missing it, but it's not as if the OLC opinion that's being rendered here is hermetically sealed from the public. It has direct public implications because it gives legal license to the FBI to engage with the public, i.e. telephone companies, and ultimately their consumers in a particular way.
There's a few differences. One of the key differences is the audience to which the opinion is directed, and another is the nature of the discretion that then resides in the FBI. So and those are related, but to take them one at a time. The audience to which it's directed, this was directed to policymakers in the FBI. This is not directed to field staff. They're not told, please, in the future when you do surveillance, make sure it's in accord with the OLC opinion. Then relatedly, and this is the second point, the people who received the opinion had the discretion to say, oh, you're telling us we have authority to do this, but we actually choose not to do it at all. We're going to do something different. We're not going to exercise.
That's not true in the tax context?
In the tax context, if they say, the legal office's view is that the tax laws require so-and-so to take a deduction of so much money, I don't think that you could say in the same sense that there's still a judgment to be made about what, the question is the legal question in that circumstance. Here you're talking about OLC giving advice to an agency which then must set forth its own directions for its officers to follow and the set of rules that will govern the public. There's an extra step of remove. It's highlighted in this case by the fact that there's no evidence that the FBI actually relied on the advice and told its officers to do anything. But even if it had, then the relevant document that you would be looking for, if there was such a document, would be the document from the FBI policymakers saying, okay, from now on when we do surveillance, here's what the rules are going to be.
So
and then we're not saying that's deliberative process.
If we knew in this case that the FBI in fact adopted the legal advice, but we don't know what the ultimate programmatic implications of that were. So we don't have, in other words, there's two steps you could draw the line at. You could say We don't even know if the FBI adopted the legal advice, and therefore the OLC's legal opinion doesn't have to be disclosed. Or you could say, even if the FBI did adopt the legal advice, we don't know what they did as a programmatic matter with that legal advice that they, by hypothesis, adopted. Are you drawing both lines, or are you saying it's only the second one that matters?
I guess I'm not sure I understand what you mean by adopt the legal advice. If the FBI says, you know, the FBI is going to set forth its own determination about what its officers are and are not permitted to do, and then its own determination about what they should do.
Right.
In each case, that's the FBI's determination to make. Now, they're likely to make it consistent with the advice that they've been given from OLC, and in the same sense that in Brennan and Murphy, the principals were likely to make their final policy determinations in line with the legal advice that they were given by their advisors.
So you think that the FBI had the same discretion as the Secretary of State in Brennan with respect to the legal advice?
I mean, I'm not sure. There's a question of sort of legal discretion, and there's a question of custom and practice. But the point here is that what FBI is going to do at the end of the day is devise its own policies and its own directions to its officers.
Which is at the second step, not at the first step about the legal advice.
Well, I mean, they asked OLC a question, and we expect them to incorporate the answers, not necessarily every line of the OLC opinion, but they're going to take into account what OLC says, and we don't expect them, as a matter of practice, to blatantly contradict it. But the point is that the thing that would be described as an agency policy that would be a final decision is whatever the FBI does and says, here's what the rules are going to be from now on.
Can they construct a program that's inconsistent with the legal advice given by OLC?
There's not a statute or regulation that says they can't. As a matter of executive branch practice, we expect that they wouldn't. Presumably, if there was a strong disagreement, obviously there are mechanisms to elevate it past OLC to the Attorney General or to the President. But ordinarily, these things are followed and worked out in the same way that we wouldn't expect ordinarily, you know, the Secretary of the Army to ignore the legal advice given by his counsel, which is also delegated authority to determine legal positions.
So that's your position, then, that the FBI has the same degree of discretion to abide by or disregard the OLC opinion as would the Secretary of the Army with respect to the General Counsel of the Army's legal advice?
I mean, it's a different scenario, so I'm not sure I can say it's exactly the same. But for the purposes of this case, the relevant point is that the policymaking official is the one who's setting the rules going forward. And if you're looking for something that's not covered by the deliberative process privilege, you have to look there. And you would only get back to the OLC opinion if they said exactly what they said in the OLC opinion is our policy going forward. And there's no evidence that they did anything remotely like that.
It's necessarily the case that because of the final decision, or another agency is itself discoverable, that the legal advice given as part of the deliberative process then becomes discoverable also.
No, quite the contrary. The cases have made quite clear that it's the final decision and not things that inputs.
If there is what would appear to be an adoption, that is to say, following the legal advice, nonetheless, the legal advice as such might remain deliberative process.
Right, and there are lots of examples of that. The renegotiation board case in the Supreme Court is an example where a board had to make a decision, and then there were recommendations that might have been followed. There were, in Sterling Drug, there were statements from individual commissioners that might have reflected what ultimately was decided. But the thing that is not covered by the deliberative process is the final thing. And in this case, there can be no question, because this was ongoing at the time that this was created. The final thing was created, if there was a final thing, by the FBI. And the fact that the FBI may have decided or may not have decided doesn't make this any less predecisional. Unless there are any further questions.
Yeah, I'm still not sure that I'm understanding your answer with respect to the OLC memo justifying past practice. You blew that off as, well, that's the past, we don't have to think about it. Except I don't think it's that easy. If the FBI is saying, when asked, you used to do X, and there are a lot of people who were concerned about it, and their answer is, we've got an OLC memo that justifies that. I don't think you can blow that off by saying that's in the past. We don't have to show you anything, because that looks like they're adopting that as a justification for policy which they could put back in play again. They're saying that is the law as we look at it, and that's what guides us, and we're invoking it. We're adopting that. That's our position. The OLC is our justification for that possibility. And we're announcing. We accept it. Now, going forward, we'll look at what they sent us, and we'll develop a policy. You're blowing it off too quickly.
The cases that talk about adoption, starting with the Sears case in the Supreme Court and then all the cases that follow it, talk about adoption in a final opinion that would itself be non-disclosable as a final decision. Now, the sorts of things that you're talking about where you might sort of publicly try to justify your conduct wouldn't be characterized as the sort of final decision that would itself be not subject to the deliberative process. I mean, it may not be subject for other reasons. It may not be deliberative. But the point of the adoption cases is that there's a final decision, and if instead of giving its own final decision and saying, here's our policy and here are all the reasons in a single document, if the agency instead says, here's our policy and the reasons are to be found in this other document, and that was in the Afshar case in this court, is a good example of what adoption actually looks like. The agency did something, and they said, the reason that we're doing this is set out in the memorandum of thus and such a date by so-and-so.
And the only difference between what you just said and what I'm asking you is the agency would say, here are the reasons for what that justify what we did. So stop complaining about what we did. We're rethinking it, and we may do some other things, but those of you who are complaining about what we did, here's our answer. We adopt this. There's no other answer they're offering other than that OLC memo.
Right, and that's a significant difference because the issue in these working law cases is if there is law that is going to be applied to the public has a right.
But this is law being applied to the public. Those who are still complaining about what was being done are asking, how do you justify that? And they're saying we justify it by reference to the OLC memo. That's the law. That's what guides us. And if it comes up again, apparently that would still be the law. We may have a new policy, but that's our law.
I guess I'm not sure if I'm understanding exactly what...
They followed certain practices that were disputed, right? The OIG certainly thought there were some questionable practices, right?
Right.
There had to be an explanation as to why would you do that? And the OLC gave them the answer. So with reference to the past, they seem to be saying, this is what guides us. This is what justifies what we did.
Well, in this particular case, it's unusual because the issue that was analyzed by the OLC was not at the time relied on by the FBI for its practices. That was developed later. That was one of the concerns of the OIG report. So in this particular case, I don't want to deviate from the hypothetical, but just to clarify, since you're talking about this case, there's no evidence that the FBI ever did anything to anyone in the public based on the rationale in this OLC opinion. Also, if you have a circumstance in which, and this is why I was struggling with what's going to happen in the future, if the FBI says, from now on, here are the rules, and they're set out in the OLC opinion, then that, depending on exactly how they articulate that, that might be express adoption. If they say, we did this thing in the past, which we think is supportable on a number of grounds, the OLC said it was fine, that falls short of express adoption for a number of reasons. None of those things happened in this particular case. We're not even close to that.
The law is not express adoption, so that's not the question.
Well, no, the word...
We have cases that say express is not the limitation.
Well, the Sears case used the word expressly and put it in italics. So we submit that it does need to be
expressed.
Sometimes
expressed. We just ignore the Supreme Court.
I'll leave that to the panel. If there are further questions.
I have one question for you. It's a technical question, but for purposes of applying these exemptions, do you, as the government, view FBI to be any differently situated than HHS?
For purposes of this case, of the OLC question, you mean?
Yes.
I don't think that there is a... I think our arguments would be the same if it was HHS.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm done.
Thank you. Stover, does Mr. Rumbold have any time left?
Mr. Rumbold does not have any time left.
We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Your Honor, I will briefly try to make 2 points. In response to the agency law question, it's important to note that in every case where this court has found the documents at issue to constitute agency law, that the agency has gotten up and said, no, these documents don't bind us. There's always a deliberative process that's continuing even after these documents are given to us. But that hasn't stopped the court from finding that they do, in fact, constitute agency law. And, Judge Santel, to answer your question about a statute, this court hasn't required a statute to enforce or to determine that the documents at issue are, in fact, controlling. And as I think the government just conceded.
The court ever said that the legal opinion of OLC is a binding final decision in and of itself?
I don't know of a court that's ever addressed that question.
All the things that we haven't said. You don't have authority for that proposition.
Well, the government conceded that FBI, in my interpretation of what they just said, that FBI is bound to follow OLC's legal interpretation.
I missed that part.
I actually thought that that what they said was that it's as a matter of practice they're followed and drew no distinction between, for example, the Secretary of State and Britain.
As a matter of practice, and that has been enough in this court's agency law cases, in tax analysts, and in coastal states. The opinions weren't formally binding, but they were routinely followed by the agency. And if I could just make one quick point about adoption, Judge Edwards, you noted that they use the OLC opinion to justify past practice, and that's exactly what happened here. The OIG was about to excoriate the FBI about their use of this provision. They went to OLC. They found cover in the OLC opinion that countenanced their past practice, and that, in turn, they were able to rely on before Congress. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. The case is submitted.